You are listening to the cycling podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 2, today we're in Brussels.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Dilbeek in Flanders.
Flanders?
Yeah. Probably about 50 metres from Brussels, but we're in Flanders. Yeah.
We are. We just crossed the boundary here. My name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Francois Thomazeau.
Hi there.
For stage two of the Tour de France. Odd sort of deja vu, wasn't it? Because the start and the finish today were in the same place as yesterday. Oh.
They certainly were. We're in the back garden of your friend Charlotte, Richard, and that is Ruby the dog, who may make an impromptu appearance or two in the podcast to either agree or disagree with things we say.
Back in your kennel, Ruby, as to paraphrase a famous line from a previous cycling podcast, said by Daniel Freiba. I'm tempted to bring up Daniel Freiba's name because I'm. As I watched the results today of the team time trial, I was reminded of the episode that we recorded last week where Daniel very confidently predicted or disagreed with a listener's point about Jumbo-Visma, tipping them as possible favourites for the team time trial, or certainly strong contenders. Daniel didn't agree. He did tip Team Sunweb, who did a good ride today, and CCC, who performed, I think, better than a lot of people, including myself, expected. But interesting stage today with a really outstanding top line winner. What's the tale of the etap, please, Lionel?
Well, you're right, Rich. Stage two from Brussels to Brussels. On the way, we went to Woluwe-Saint-Pierre, the birthplace of Eddy Merckx, and also to Schaerbeek, the birthplace of Jacques Brel, the two great Belgians. I think Eddy Merckx was probably better at cycling. Jacques Brel was certainly better at singing. Or, well, I say certainly better. I think we don't really know about Eddy Merckx's singing.
Well, I think he tried at some stage, you know, to like all these guys to make a record. It was not very, very good, so let's forget him.
Maybe another episode of Tour de la Musique for Kilometre Zero is on the cards with that we did a couple of years ago.
Carpool karaoke with Eddy Merckx.
Anyway, yeah, it was a team time trial today, 27.6 kilometres. Ineos were off first because of their positions in the opening road stage. They weren't preparing for that at all. Richard, you can probably talk a little bit about that as we get further into the episode. But they set off and set the best time and were in the hot seat for nearly the whole afternoon. Sunweb and Katusha both got within 6 seconds of them. EF Education First were 8 seconds behind Ineos. And then De Koninck Quickstep went very, very close. They were just 0.82 of a second behind Ineos. But behind them, Jumbo-Visma were absolutely blazing a trail. They, of course, started last because they had Mike Tournison in the yellow jersey, and they won by 20 seconds, which in 27.6 kilometres is quite a mullering. So Mike Tournison has extended his stay in the yellow jersey and is now leading by 10 seconds from his teammate Wout van Aert, who now has the white jersey as best young rider. Jumbo-Visma have the top six overall. Tournison is in the green jersey, but that will be worn again by Peter Sagan tomorrow. And Greg Van Avermaet is still in the polka dots. The teams that did less well, Movistar, perhaps now we ought to say they're performing to par because they had a shocker last year, a pretty poor result again today. 17th, losing a minute and five to Jumbo-Visma. That's not great news for Nairo Quintana, Mikel Landa and Alejandro Valverde. Team UAE Emirates were the only team to finish with all eight riders together, and they were just a place ahead of Movistar, so quite a chunk of time lost by Dan Martin. Trek Segafredo probably not too happy either in 18th place because that meant that Richie Porter's lost significant ground, and Romain Bardet will be feeling exactly the same because they were another place further back, AG2R. So at the top, probably not too many surprises other than the dominance of Jumbo-Visma. I mean, as I said, 20 seconds over that distance is quite some result.
The fastest closing in a world tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and Watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We had a very pleasant morning at the Rafa pop-up, didn't we, in Brussels?
Yeah, we popped in to the pop-up and an amazing number of people were there to say hello. We had a really good chat with some people who had come over to Brussels to watch the Grand Depart, and some of whom had been at our event on Friday evening. I have to say, having been sort of spotted here, there and everywhere, it really is amazing to see so many podcast listeners and friends of the podcast. Always very nice when people come up and say hello. It's been a really memorable start here
and
in Brussels.
That place is open, the Rafa pop-up, for another week, I think, in Brussels. Thanks to Katrina Percival for hosting us there. And it's really worth a visit if you're in Brussels, as a lot of people clearly are. The crowds have been great. And today, the Team Time Trial, I think the Team Time Trial is a great spectacle. I enjoy it a lot.
It's eight times better than an individual time trial.
Yeah, that's
scientific.
Eight times, you're sure? I mean, the stat is questionable,
I think. What do you think, Francois? Are you a fan of the Team Time
Trial?
No,
I hate it. I don't hate it, because of course it's nice. I mean, you know, they got nice gear, it goes even faster than the individual time trial, that there's all effort, that's like, the aesthetics of it are nice, but it goes quite fast. I mean, you know, and sometimes the suspense is not there. You have the impression that people don't really know how to react to a team time trial, because it's kind of unusual, you know. So there's no real tactics. It's kind of full gas for everybody involved, and at least in an individual time trial, because it's long and it lags on for forever during the day. You could have changes due to the weather or guys crashing. And in team time trials, from time to time, they're just very interesting athletic effort, you know. But I don't find it really exciting in terms of suspense.
They don't all go fast, Francois. Look at AG2R.
If you want me to talk about AG2R, I can, because I talked to the guys and know exactly why they...
Oh, really? Yeah. What happened?
Well, it's kind of simple. Unfortunately, if you'd asked me at the start of the tour about the chances... Well, I was actually asked it at the little thing we had at the BIOS project the other day. I really don't fancy Romain Bardet this year, not because of his personal abilities, but because AG2R are really jinxed, have been jinxed all season. Two of their guys crashed at the French Championships. There are two guys in the crash yesterday, Alexis Vuillermoz and Benoît Cosnefroy. And I talked to Stéphane Goubert, their team director, who told me that they were in a bad way, meaning that, you know, to crash the day before a team time trial, when you're not a good team, that's probably your soft spot, and you crash on top of that. So... Bardet lost Pierre Latour before the tour, and now Vuillermoz was one of the guys to help him in the mountains. Is not, you know, feeling well either. They're really not looking very promising for now.
I'm going to contradict Francois here. Just stick up for the team time trial for a minute. I think there's a lot to unpick when you see the results, and certainly when you look at the way each team has approached it, certainly from looking at it at a glance. I mean, seven of the teams finished with the minimum four riders, 10 of the teams finished with five riders, and as we said at the beginning, only one came home with all eight riders altogether. Astana had seven riders together, perhaps because they wanted to make sure that Fuglsang had as much support as possible after his crash yesterday. So there's some nuance to the tactics here.
As you know, this is very tactical. I mean, some guys are asked during the team time trial in the last kilometers to take it easy for the days to come, and the thing is to get your four guys, you know, to the line, and that's what's. I mean, that's a tactic some teams adopted, like Quickstep, the Cunning, for instance, or others. But even so, you know, The problem I have with the team time trial, and we saw it today, it doesn't have a real serious impact on the. I mean, if you look at, the Jumbo Visma were impressive, but if you look for the 10 teams behind that, it's actually a matter of seconds and not a matter of minutes.
Yeah, it's tiny handfuls of time, but Jumbo Visma were just extraordinary today. If you look at the the difference in the average speed. You know, 57.2 kilometers an hour for them, 56.5, and then, you know, for a Team Ineos, then 56.5, then 56.35, and all very close behind them, and they were just in a different league.
Well, yeah. I always think the most remarkable thing about the team time trial is how small the gaps are, really, when you think that, okay, once the event's got going, everyone's kind of got something to work off. While you're down, you're up, they sort of know. Obviously they are riding to to get everything out of the tank before they reach the line, but the remarkable thing was that spread of teams from probably Ineos down to even Bahrain, you know, in ninth place. Pretty, you can throw a napkin over them, really. The performances of Groupama, FDJ and Bahrain in particular, you know, shoving themselves into the top 10, that's really impressive, and bodes well for both Thibaut Pinot and Vincenzo Nibali. In terms of the time gaps, and, you know, maybe the way to assess a team time trial and who's done well and who's done badly is to actually break it down by budget. The problem with that is getting accurate budget figures, but I've tried to do that a little bit this evening. A pretty reputable Dutch source has put the Jumbo-Visma annual budget for the cycling and also the speed skating team at around 20 million euros. Can't imagine the speed skating costs that much, but so say 20 million euros. Ineos, when they were Team Sky, were reportedly 35 million euros. And when you talk to people on the team, they don't kind of dismiss that out of hand. I mean, they tried to kind of say, no, that's too much. But it's reported that Ineos have bumped that up a bit. But let's take the 35 million euro figure. Wanty Goubert were last. And at the finish, I went to speak to their general manager, Jean-François Bourlet. And I asked him the very simple question, what's your annual budget? And he said 6 million euros. And I said, well, you're only 1 minute 38 behind Ineos. And he said, only? And I said, well, considering the budgets, it works out at nearly 300,000 euros per second. It's cost Ineos to finish that far ahead of Wanty Goubert. So when you break it down, and perhaps if we had the figures for every team, that would possibly be quite an interesting way to analyse who's done well, who's done badly.
What's also quite interesting, if you look at Jumbo-Visma, is they had a difficult balancing act today, because they've obviously got the yellow jersey with Tournesson, but they've also got Steven Kruiswijk, George Bennett as well. How do you, manage a team with sort of GC ambitions and pure climbers like George Bennett, and also fast guys like Wout van Aert, Tony Martin, Laurens de Ploos as well, who was tailed off at the end. But Groenewegen, now he might have been injured after his crash, I'm not sure.
He lost
a lot of time today. I don't know. I imagine that Groenewegen would be pretty useful in a team time trial. And had he won yesterday and been in the yellow jersey, whether that might have had a different bearing on today's result, who knows? That's speculation. But I did speak to George Bennett at the finish, and also Richard Ploeg, the general manager at Jumbo-Visma. First, we'll hear from George Bennett, the New Zealander, and then we'll hear from Richard Ploeg.
George, quick one, just 100% record so far in this Tour de France for your team.
You
won that by a long way. Are you surprised by the
how much did we win by?
20 seconds.
Really? I knew we were up pretty far at halfway, like 10 seconds or something. But I kind of thought we might be.
Every other team separated by a unit of seconds, and you've got it by a long way.
Yeah, that's just credit to the hard work that... as riders and the staff.
Have you done a lot of work on the team time trial?
Yeah, we'd fly to Holland early and do team time trial training on an airfield my teammate just arrived. So we did a lot of work. It's been all year. Special aero projects going on, all this stuff, so yeah.
And is that the fastest you've ever gone on a bike, the hardest you've ever done?
I've pulled some of my bigger turns. I actually wasn't rolling the first bit, and because it was just too fast for someone like me to keep the speed. And then I came in towards the side bit at the end and had to pull some doubles there, and started hurting a little bit towards the last few hundred metres, but yeah, it was good.
I guess you're a very happy man.
Yes, I am. I'm proud, really proud, of what we did in the last years. I told you in the winter time. And we're making progress step by step, still in development, but really happy with this.
I was speaking to George Bennett at the finish. He said they'd done a lot of work for the team time trial. Can you elaborate on that a bit in terms for this in particular? What kind of preparation did they do?
Well, we brought in, you know, with Mathieu Heiboer, who is a time trial specialist of the team, and he brought in a lot of effort, you know, in our aerodynamics training specifics, but also with Laurence Deplus and Tony Martin here. We have two incredible engines, and of course the rest of the team is also in good shape, so, you know, they were flying, we were behind it, and it's... They need some, how do you call it, the wings of the Formula One, because they need some downforce.
And in terms of preparing for this race today in particular, George was saying they went to Holland, did some preparation there. Was that last week?
Yeah. Because George was not able to come earlier because of his program in California and things like that. So we brought him to the wind tunnel and to the, you know, put him in a better position on the bike, aerodynamic wise. So.
And as you said, you've got a couple of really big engines, and Wout van Aert as well, and Tony Martin. How did the team?
All eight.
Yeah, you've also got climbers like George Bennett and Stephen Kreiswijk. What was the strategy to use all their strengths in the most effective way possible?
Well, we said to George that he should not take turns in the beginning, because we knew we could use him at the end, and we should lose normally at the climb, Dylan and maybe some of the other like Amund, which happened, and then we need him, you know, to do the last turns also. So, and it's that worked out.
So 100% record so far in this Tour de France for you. Wout van Aert tomorrow, Dylan Groenewegen on Tuesday.
That would be amazing. It's already sports history in Holland, because we had the first Dutch yellow jersey in 30 years, and now we win the first team time trial in also something like 30 years or something of a Dutch squad. So it's sports history.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
This episode of our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by Watt Bike, and in particular the Watt Bike Atom, which Richard, both of us have had a go on. I used the Watt bike to get ready for the London to Brighton, because I've not done an awful lot of cycling, so I did a few high intensity training sessions at home in my office, and then you took...
We had it for 2 weeks each, didn't we? We had a loan bike, and it was, I had it in my office, and I did a few hard sessions as well, Lionel.
I'm sure you did. Well, you're flying on that that carbon fibre bike you've got here, aren't you? And it's obviously put you in good stead. And, well, we're going to hear quite a lot about the Watt bike over the next 3 weeks of the Tour de France. But let's hear first from the day that the Watt bike arrived at my office, or my indoor training centre. The Watt bike Atom arrived this morning, and my first impression was it's a substantial piece of kit. It's really heavy. It does tilt forward onto some wheels, so it was pretty easy just to manoeuvre through the house and roll it into my office or my elite training centre, as I like to think of it. And I've got it exactly in the position that I want it here. It's plugged into the wall and positioned in front of my computer screen, so I can do a Zwift session if I want. And I've taken a little bit of time to put my own pedals on it, and also to adjust the handlebars and the saddle so that they are in a position as close as I can get it to my regular road bike. So I'm ready to have a go on it. I'm going to set it up with Trainer Road and have a go at one of the sessions on there. Well, as you know, Richard, I've got no patience. I'm also pretty ham-fisted, so being able to set up the Watt bike as easily as I could was a big bonus. Within sort of 5 minutes, I was on. I'd hooked it all up to, in the first instance, Trainer Road, and was off and pedalling. But I used it with both Trainer Road and Zwift, and I think you used the Watt bike training system as well.
Yeah, they've got their own programs, and from those you get all this and fascinating data. We'll hear a bit about this throughout the tour, but pedaling effect in the score and that kind of thing, obviously very accurate and fascinating. A whole new world of data that I didn't even really know existed, and quite revelatory actually for me, some of it.
If you want to check out Watt Bike's range, and in particular the Watt Bike Atom, go to wattbike.com. But if you're in the UK and want to buy a Watt Bike Atom before July the 31st, Watt Bike is offering a £100 Sigma Sports voucher with every Watt Bike Atom purchased. Go to wattbike.com/T TCP100. That's TCP100, and use the code TCP100 or TCP100 at the checkout to receive this offer.
Well, chaps, I was at the finish when De Koon and Quickstep finished, and at that point, you know, with Ineos in the hot seat, as they'd been all day, it looked as if they were obviously the team to beat. De Koon and Quickstep went very close within a second. They were the angriest team I've ever seen. Yves Lampaert was fuming. You know, they really felt they'd missed out on the stage win there by not quite beating them. In the end, they lost the stage by over 20 seconds. But it was interesting to see how much it meant to them to not quite have beaten Team Ineos.
I think that that's probably the key to team time trials. You have in a grand tour, you have teams who come to the team time trial to win it, and you have the teams who come to the team time trial to lose as little time as possible. And some teams obviously had made choices, like Groupama FDJ. If you look at Thibaut Pinot's chances, they've kind of improved, I mean, at least mentally, compared to other GC contenders, because they did well. And why did they do that? They did well because they actually took a guy, Stephen Kung, the Swiss guy, specifically for the team time trial. So some teams really obviously prepared especially for that, and included guys, you know, for the team time trial. Probably it was the case with Jumbo-Visma, obviously it was the case with Ineos, and obviously the case with the Koenig and other teams, and obviously there were other teams like Movistar. I heard from my Spanish colleague that Mikel Landa was said it was his fault. You know, he said, "I was a burden today." You know, so they had to wait for Landa, who was in a bad way today, but we know that Movistar never. Sometimes they do perform actually in team time trials, but obviously they didn't come on the tour with the goal of winning the team time trial.
But that's the problem with three leaders who are all climbers. You know, if one of them's on a bad day, you got to wait for them. Do you know if Groupama FDJ had to wait for David Godu at all? Because I noticed he finished in the first group.
Well, he was given the same time, but he actually crashed on the last corner.
Oh,
Godu,
he?
Yeah. So they didn't wait for Godu. They carried on, but the results. I mean, they got to. I don't know where this is going. Where's this going?
Well, it's, you know, it's Richard's favourite joke and literary joke.
Hopefully, there'll be lots more opportunities for that joke this Tour de France. I think he's going to do really well this tour. That was a couple of years ago. They really upped their game on time trials and team time trials. Groupama FDJ and Pinot as well. But then they seem to dip again, and this was a really solid ride.
It depends on the tactics, and it depends on what Pinot is doing, whether he's doing the tour or not, and whether there is a team time trial or not on the tour, because it's that's not always the case. The interesting thing they've done in the past few years, FDJ, they were always, you know, not always, but they were often a French team with French riders mainly, and they brought in Swiss talent from because there's no longer real Swiss teams in the peloton, and they have these guys like Morabito or Raschenbach to help Pinot in the mountains, two Swiss guys, and they brought in Stephen Kung last season to, you know, boost their time trial abilities, and probably even to help and inspire Thibaut Pinot to be a better time trial. He's already a pretty good time trialist actually, but to improve that. And once again, because I mentioned Bardet in the beginning, in this respect, Pinot is obviously an edge on Bardet by far.
Just a word on Team Sunweb, who finished a very good fourth, which, when you consider they haven't got Tom Dumoulin here as a GC contender, Katusha, probably the surprise of the day, really. Alex Dowsett won the National Time Trial Championship a few days ago. I don't want to give any credit to our exciting new feature outside the team bus, but he was the first victim of that yesterday, and he was talking about you know, how much they were looking forward to giving it some welly in the team time trial, and that's a
very
a well
surprising result. Yeah, will we hear a little bit from Dirk De Mol? I spoke to him at the finish. He's their sports director, and well, I was surprised to hear how little preparation they'd done for the team time trial. Well, that was a very strong performance. You were up with about 7k to go at that point. Did you think you were going to win it?
I mean, still some really strong teams need to finish, of course. But it looked like we were on the way to have the best time at the finish. Okay, we were ahead, and at the end we lost by 4 seconds. But I think it was a very strong performance of the team. I mean, a team time trial is always a special thing. Also, some. Yeah, you need some guys who can make the difference, and we knew with Niels and with Mats and Alex, of course, that we had three machines, and they can make the difference. So they were really carrying on the team.
Had you done a lot of preparation for this as a team in the last week?
No, to be honest, no. We didn't have spent much time on it, especially also your final selection is always done late. We had some, I don't say problems, but till we had our final eight riders, we wait till 10 days ago, let's say. And we didn't spend much time. So, and also here on the course, we had only this noon, 1 hour to go on the parcours. They did it one time, but we could see immediately that it was going good. And now I'm happy with the performance of the team. It proves also that that the team is in good form. And I hope that we can show some more good things in the next weeks.
What do you put it down to? I mean, was it the strategy to let those three guys really do the heavy lifting? Were they taking longer turns on the front?
Well, it's actually TT is actually quite simple. I mean, you have to take the advantage of your strong guys, and it's by example when they go on a speed of 58 average, and they can hold on the speed for 20 seconds, they just do it. If you come in the lead and after 4 or 5 seconds you go down to 50, you have to pull off immediately. So that's as simple as that. I mean, you take the advantage of your strongest riders and those three. But also Rick was really good. I mean, everybody was good.
Just behind Katusha were EF Education First, and on Friday night Jonathan Vorters came along to our event at the Brussels Beer Project, and one of the questions was whether he thought they could win the team time trial, and he said, well, they'd be in the mix, but
I think that was my question.
It was your question, actually, Richard. Yeah, one of the weaker questions, I thought, but
still, here it is raising its head in the podcast, no less.
I'm joking. But he said everything would have to go right. They'd need a little bit of luck. It would need to be one of those days where absolutely every factor is perfect for them to win. But they were well in the mix there. You know, a couple of seconds back from Sunweb and Katusha. Yeah.
I listened to TJ Van Garderen at the finish talking to Jens Vogt for American TV. And he was very keen to know, you know, exactly the splits and how they got on then. And I think they really fancied it. They did have a strong team for this.
Because I think that it's like football in a way, you know. You have teams who have a tradition. And it's the same with cycling. I mean, there is a team time trial tradition in the Jonathan Vorter's outfits. And you have to live up to that. It's like CCC. Everybody was discounted them, saying they had no chance. But CCC...
Including you yesterday, Francois,
right.
Calling them a small team.
I was kind of joking. But you know, CCC were actually, when they were BMC, by far the best team time trial outfit. And it kind of stayed there a little bit, because if you look at the lineup, it's not impressive, but they were in the mix too.
No, and there was Marco Pinotti going around talking to every single rider afterwards. He's their time trial coach. And I was hanging around waiting for word with him. I didn't get one in the end. But somebody I did, heard what he said was Jakob Fuglsang, who obviously had a really bad crash. And Astana were second team off today. So when they finished just sort of 20 seconds down on Team Ineos, it looked like it was a very solid performance in the circumstances. They were obviously nursing Fuglsang a bit. He looked okay. We'll hear a little bit from Fuglsang. And Francois, you spoke to the team doctor as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I spoke to Serge Niamke, who is there, the team doctor, and he told me, you know, he had an arch, you know, eye arch problem, but that's solved, an elbow problem, that's not a problem at all. The main problem he still has, you know, got a painful just over the knee. So there's a real problem there. He said that today on the flat, it didn't affect his running too much. But as soon as he gets up on the pedals, he's struggling. And Serge told me that they're really trying to work on him as much as they can with massage and everything to take Fuglsang, you know, in the best possible condition for La Planche des Belles Filles. And Serge told me La Planche des Belles Filles will be the real test on whether this injury and this crash can affect his GC position. So, yeah, we're still a little bit in the unknown. And, well, Planche des Belles Filles would have been a test anyway. But in the case of Fuglsang, maybe even more so.
Well, here's what Fuglsang said at the end.
I still have a big flat and the tour is still long, so we will see. It was bad luck yesterday, but tour is long, and I'm for sure ready to fight until Paris. And there's a lot of bike racing to do still, and the big mountains are to come. And I believe that I will get back on top in a few days. I'm not 100% now, but I believe that I will get back there. I think we did a very decent team time trial for us, and I'm happy with it. I'm happy that I actually could also turn with the guys yesterday. I was fearing that I would have to just sit on the wheel, but we worked hard yesterday with the game ready with Indiba, and then with Massas and Tuonio, and also this morning, and everything helped a little bit, and I was able to pedal without too much pain. The cut over the eye is not giving me any problem. The leg is the worst thing, and unfortunately that's what you need here, but it will be okay in a few days, I guess.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. Now, Francois and Lionel, indeed, Team Ineos in the hot seat for most of the day. Not an ideal day for them today. They going off first was not perfect, and then having to sit around in the hot seat all day, not ideal for them, but that was the circumstances after stage one. And Francois, you spoke to their sports director Nicolas Portal at the start.
I think it's kind of disappointing, because every time there's a team time for a lead, Team Ineos or Team Sky in the old days, they're always pipped as, favourites, and they never won a team time trial on the Tour de France. And, I talked to Nicolas Portal, and he just outpointed, that they were not the favourites because they never won a team time trial on the Tour. And the rest of it, he says much better than I do, so maybe we'll listen to him.
So I'm with Nicolas Portal, the team director of Team Ineos. Nicolas, everybody has been discussing the fact that you were starting first today in this team time trial. Did it mean you had to prepare differently? I mean, last night or even this morning?
Yes, obviously you got less time to during your day. By the time you wake up and you start time, so everything is a bit more rushy, I would say. But yesterday, it was more. The idea was to try to give to the guy the same amount of time. So obviously it's not possible, but prioritize some really important moments. So wake up, breakfast, a good recon. So make sure if I have to turn around, do a turn a few times, we've got time, there's no rush. And then you have to have this kind of moment where you just drop down the pressure, you do something totally different, and then a short, quick debrief meeting, and boom, go on the bike. So those moments, they're really important. I would say the most important moment is just after the recon, until you're going to go on a warm-up on the turbo. So I think we did. It was less time, obviously, but I think it was good.
The fact that there won't be any reference time for the guys to kind of base their race on, is it a problem?
Not for us. We used to don't really focus too much on times to the other teams. If not, it's more like to give them like a kind of boost, confidence, meaning like, okay, we are on track, everything is okay. But we're not the type of team to say, right, we got 20 seconds less, come on, you have to go back, come back. You got the risk to actually put more stress on the guys, and they're going to ride on the red zone, and then, when you're in the red zone, you're going to lose time soon. So in general, you have to put yourself in the bubble and try to ride as quick as you can from a point A to B, So just be concentrated on yourself and do the right thing all the time. Be concentrated on small details. And obviously, it's going to be about 30 minutes painful effort, but it is always,
As everybody knows, you're among the favorites in this stage. If you do win it, that's the question everybody's asking, who will be in the yellow jersey tonight?
We'll see. I think this is. I'm not gonna take this responsibility. The guys, they will. If they have to kill each other, they will. But no. I think I need to say I don't feel we are the favorites. The last, but I hope we can win the stage is a hope, because we've all been good, actually. We finished second in the same time in BMC for a couple of centièmes, 100 seconds a few years ago. And last year was we done a good time trial, so we've all been pretty good. But never won the TT in the two, team time trial.
That's right.
So they will be actually so good. We put in so many efforts to try to win, like other teams, but it's true that we never win, so it would be fantastic if that can happen this year.
Yeah, Richard, you were talking earlier today as we were making our way across Brussels about the impact of being first off, where Team Ineos wouldn't have been expecting that. Everything had to get shunted forward a couple of hours, didn't it? So it meant that the mechanics had to work slightly differently, the riders had to warm up, you know, earlier, of course, and then they had nothing really to go off other than their own performance. Nothing, no markers along the way. All they could be told was, yeah, you've got the best time through each checkpoint. So kind of odd that one of the serious teams is in that position where they have to go out first and basically they're almost in the dark a little bit.
Although it was a bit of bad luck, wasn't it, with the crash to Geraint Thomas and so on. That's what caused,
of course,
that issue. It did mean that what, you know, on paper looked like being quite a relaxed day became a very different kind of day, where everything is, as you say, brought forward a couple of hours.
And had it not been for Jumbo Visma this evening, Gianni Moscon could have been in the yellow jersey.
What a story.
two Tour de France days after he was kicked out of the race for lashing out at Elie Gesbert in last year's tour on the stage to Carcassonne.
Yeah, and once again, it might be a blessing in disguise for Team Sky or Team Ineos not to win team time trials, because I checked the stats, as I told you before we started recording the podcast. I checked the stats, and teams who win team time trials in Grand Tours very rarely do win the Tour. So last time it happened on the Tour was actually 10 years ago when Astana with Contador and an American guy named slipped my mind.
It's been redacted from my mind.
Well, no, 2009 is not redacted,
no,
is
that,
it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he lost that because he finished third.
Sorry.
That was a brilliant team time trial that day. It was very, very close, wasn't it? And Garmin finished with just five riders.
It was in Montpellier, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And in fact, the whole course of the Tour's history could have been completely different, because Cancellara took the yellow jersey that day by less than a second from
and
Armstrong.
And the controversial Lance Armstrong was just missed out on the yellow jersey.
That's the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if he'd got into the yellow jersey in Montpellier, he would have been ahead of Alberto Contador, his teammate, which would have shackled Contador, arguably. We could have seen a whole different Tour de France that year. Yeah. History could have been different.
It could indeed. More results from today. Mitchelton Scott, specialists in the team time trial, perhaps a bit disappointed. Well, I'm sure they are disappointed with 11th on the day.
Mid-table.
The times are not catastrophic. You know, they're 21 seconds down on Ineos. It's not a huge amount of time for Adam Yates to have lost. The surprise, I guess, was Simon Yates getting dropped quite early on. Mm. But solid, but not what we expect from that team. They've been one of the top four, you know, over the last few years. It's been BMC, De Koning Quickstep, Team Sky, and another one.
A question.
What's
comes
the other one?
A question comes.
What's
to
the other top four?
Mitchelton Scott.
Yeah.
A question comes to mind. You know, when you see the results and the guys who got dropped today, maybe that's the list of guys who will be the real stage hunters in the rest of the tour. Maybe these guys, you know, took it easy today to lose as much time as possible to be in a position to go in the breaks in the stages to come. So maybe Simon Yates, you know, is in that position. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, actually.
Well, I did speak to Daryl Impey at the finish, the South African on Mitchelton Scott. He finished with the first batch riders. They finished with four, the minimum allowed. Adam Yates, Matteo Trentin, Luke Durbridge, Daryl Impey. And here's what he said at the finish. How was that today, Daryl? Looked like you finished with the minimum there, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's just
the sign that everyone gave it the all. It's by no means anyone's weak. We gave it our best shot. We knew we had to finish with four guys minimum, so we did that, and we gave Adam the best chance we could.
I mean, the team's got a great record in this discipline. How did that compare with some of the previous efforts?
Look, a lot of us, it's the first time riding a Triple T together, so Jack Hagee's new to the squad here, and I think we did a really good ride today. I think we can be happy with that.
Simon was struggling, obviously, and then dropped. Was there any indecision there about waiting for him, or was it clear in the team's mind that if anyone, it's all about Adam here, and that if Simon was in trouble, you'd just go?
Yeah, sure. I think we're here for Adam. Simon's had his turn in the Giro, and he's come here as support for Adam. So him getting dropped today is no concern to us.
So Daryl Impey there just confirming what the team has said, that it's all for Adam Yates. And Simon Yates, true to his word, he said he wasn't coming here for GC, and he certainly isn't now. Mm. I had it in the back of my mind that he would be seeing how his legs were the first week or so and keeping that as an option, but clearly not.
Well, maybe that was the case, and he found out how his legs were today.
Maybe. That's also possible, Lionel, yes.
Well, is it that time of day again, Richard?
Oh, it's so exciting.
Is it? Well, we all hang out outside team buses, don't we, at the Tour de France. It's one of our favourite things to do while we're in France in July, although
we're
still in
Belgium.
Smells
good, it's great. All these nice people run buses.
Often there's no shade. Your self-esteem takes a dip every now and again. Anyway, this morning I spoke to a young man riding his second Tour de France. He's riding in his national champions jersey, but he had a difficult first day on the tour yesterday.
Outside the team bus with
Tom Skoyinch, Trek Segafredo.
So this is your second Tour de France. Do you feel like a bit of a veteran now?
No, not at all. Especially not after yesterday. That's kind of a rookie mistake I had yesterday, but we're moving onwards.
So what happened?
Ate something that didn't sit well with my stomach. Pretty much it, long story short.
Do you know the culprit? Do you know what it was?
I think we've narrowed it down, yeah.
Are you going to give it away?
I mean, it was just like a beetroot concentrate thing that's a bit strong. And turns out I'm not the first or last guy, probably.
So too much beetroot on day one of the tour. Try and avoid that in future.
Yeah, and make sure it's not out of date as well.
That is a rookie mistake, really. Yeah. Other than that, how are you feeling? And having the national champions jersey here as well, does that give you a standing taller, feeling prouder?
Yeah, definitely. It's nice. The only problem was the way I showed it too much yesterday was at the back of the peloton. But there's going to be better days, so we're good. We're moving up. And it's been a while since the Latvian champ has been in the tour, so I'm super, super happy about it.
What's the Latvian championship road race like?
It's pretty annoying. We don't have that many starters. And
How many this year?
16. Yeah, not that many. Last year was 18. The year before, I think it was 25 or something. And we obviously know each other, so it's we know each other too well. So it's very hard always.
What kind of circuit?
Latvia is pretty flat, so it's never too selective, which is fine because, makes for a more open race. Usually there's some wind, sometimes no wind. Depends on the day, obviously. This year was just a touch of wind, which helped me. And, it worked out this year.
So it's basically like being in a break, but from the gun.
Pretty much, that's what it is. And a break from the gun that tries to form another break from the gun again.
So in a couple of sentences, how did you win it?
We had three guys go up the road pretty early, and then at one point a bridge to them. And after that, we rode together a little bit, and went solo with 40K to go or so. And then that was it.
And what's the profile of cycling like in Latvia, and what kind of interest is there in the Tour de France?
It's definitely growing, and it's been a while since we've had a journalist at the tour, but they're trying to, I mean, they want to come. Already this year there were a few that were asking if they did, what kind of like access could they think about to me, but I mean, it's always hard to, I mean, the tour is crazy, so it's hard to say what actually they can get out of it. But the popularity is growing, and there's more cyclists on the road every day, so it's nice.
What's your profile like back home?
Very low, very nice. I don't have to worry about anything. No one knows who I am, so it's great.
Now, just about the tour and the team time trial today, what's it like for a rider like you, where basically it's the ultimate team day, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I really like this event. It's definitely, it suits me better than an individual time trial. And last year I was feeling really good. This year, I mean, probably not as good, but I'm still here for the whole for the team and for Richie. And I'll probably do a suicide pool at some point and pack it in, hopefully not too early on. But yeah, it's all about being smooth, all about being fast, and sticking together as far as we can.
How much prep are you able to do as a group, and what are the current trends in team time trialing?
Yeah, obviously it's hard to find time when you can get all together and ride as much, and you never do as much as you want. You definitely have to make time for it, but we've managed to make time here and there. So, I think it should be a good TT for us.
And in terms of how you're riding it, you know, what's the kind of the current fashion for team time trialing?
Go as fast as you can. I mean,
I think it's always been like that, but
I mean, there's not much to it. When you swing out far so you don't mess it up. I mean, yeah, there's not much to it. Go hard and yeah, I mean, yeah.
Go hard till you drop.
Yeah, pretty much.
And lastly, very lastly, what is there a change dynamic with having Richie Port on the team this year? A different emphasis for the team as a whole?
Not necessarily. Last year, Boca was also going for GC, and we were trying the same thing. So it's pretty much the same.
Well, I better let you get on with your warm-up, because you're off at 3:15, I think. Good luck, and thank you.
Thanks.
So, Tom Schuyns is the Lanterne Rouge at the moment in the Tour de France. He lost that time yesterday and was dropped by Trek Segafredo today after contributing to the effort early in the stage. But, yes, 7-something minutes down, last man overall. And, well, hopefully he's going to get over Beetroot's revenge and start coming good as the days go by. But talking of food, I can smell something very nice coming from the kitchen here, so it must be nearly dinner time, but we can't finish the podcast without mentioning last night's dinner, Francois, at a restaurant you booked, which was called Aux Armes.
Yeah, Aux Armes de Bruxelles, which means kind of Brussels Arms. Let's, you know, say rather simple.
And
could be the pub's name. Yeah, and we had clams, didn't we?
Clams and chorizo casserole.
It was pretty good.
That was
and
good.
You went for kind of classic stuff, the two of you. And I went for a typical Brussels dish that's anguille au vert. It's one of my favorite Belgian dishes. And it's anguille, as some of you might know, is eel. So, I can see from, I can describe the air of the look of disgust on Lionel's face.
Doesn't eat snakes.
He doesn't eat andouille yet, and he doesn't like snakes either, or at least anguille. I think it's a shame because it was really good. I mean, the anguille were perfectly cooked, and it's in a green sauce, so of course you've got herbs there. It's very tasty, very, very, well, let's face it, eels don't taste much like anything. It's just, you know, kind of fish. Mm. But the fact that, you know, it's all baked and cooked and in this green sauce makes it really... No, I really love that that dish. And it's... So if you come to Brussels and you go in a restaurant, you know, downtown near Grand Place or in Sainte-Catherine, which is a place where lots of restaurants are, really try, if not disgusted by eels or snakes, really try, take my word and try anguille au vert. That's great.
Very quickly, I had the Carré d'Agneau, the rack of lamb. At 10 o'clock at night, a little bit late for a hefty meat meal. That's the first and last mistake of the tour for me on that front. Hold me to that, please. I'm going to eat light after tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, snakes don't stay with you overnight.
I had the John Dory, and it was very nice indeed.
Yeah, a bit lighter. Light. Yeah. Looked very fresh, light sauce. Tasty. Looked lovely. Yeah.
Very nice chips with it as well.
And tomorrow night, we'll be in Épernay, or very near to Épernay, one of the great champagne towns. And we are going to be the guest of David Hesketh, a listener, podcast listener, who came to our event in Clapham at the end of last year and approached you first, Francois, and invited us to, I hope we're going to get a glass of champagne tomorrow.
David, if you're listening, we would love a glass of champagne. Yeah, we enter France tomorrow, don't we? And before we go, we should also say that tomorrow begins Kilometre Zero series, 5 episodes a week. And tomorrow's is about Eddie Merckx, the greatest cyclist of all time. We've got a few interviews and stuff about Merckx. Got quite a lot of Daniel Friedman there, the author of the definitive biography of Eddie Merckx, The Cannibal. Well, one of the definitive biographies of Eddie Merckx.
Two of which came out in the same year. The other one was by William Fotheringham.
Yes.
Both very good books. So.
Both very good. Kilometre Zero, sponsored by Hans Grohe Showers and Taps. Thank you very much indeed to them for allowing us to make these episodes and release them to you to listen to. I was riding around Brussels today on my folding bike. Well, our folding bike, Lionel, we are sharing it. Not...
I think it's mine, actually,
so
because it's got this little mod target, on it. So being an old mod, man. I mean, it belongs either to me or Bradley Wiggins.
Well, you can have a go on it as well, Francois. It's a beautiful carbon folding bike made by Austin Cycles. It's an Austin Cycles AC Atto, and you can win this bike that I'm riding around on and that we're riding around on. It's worth, I think, £2,750. So it's an expensive premium product, the folding bike. Sign up to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com, and if you sign up to the newsletter, you'll receive the newsletter, and from that you can click on a tab to enter the competition. So we've had quite a lot of entries so far. Just have to say why you should win it.
More importantly, you can see a photograph of the bike, and then you'll understand why it has the price tag, because it's a really striking bike, isn't it? It looks like a folding race bike, really.
Does indeed. Before we go, chaps, it's that time again where we should say thank you to some friends of the podcast. My thanks to Justin Hancock, James Houston, Katrina Percival. Hang on, Katrina Percival, that's Rafa.
Well, thank you very
much. Thanks, Katrina. Richard Hunter, Jeremy Kirby, and Richard Kibble.
And a big thank you to Gerard Hewitt, Robert Salter, David Owen, Pryor Gary, I think that's Gary Pryor, actually, David Randall, and Sam Scott.
Okay, so Craig Wilmots, Susan Tafner, Lindsay Delany, and Kate Cheesewright. And I'd like to tell all our friends of the podcast, paraphrasing Jacques Brel, ne me quitte pas, don't leave us.
Oh, wait, we've got to play out with a bit of Jacques Brel then.
Ne me quitte pas, il faut oublier tout, peut s'oublier qui s'enfuit déjà, oublier le temps des malentendus et le temps perdu à savoir comment. Oublier ces heures qui tuaient parfois à coups de pourquoi le cœur du bonheur. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. Moi, je t'offrirai des perles de pluie venues de pays où il ne pleut pas. Je creuserai la terre jusqu'après ma mort pour couvrir ton corps d'or et de lumière. Je ferai un domaine où l'amour sera roi, où l'amour sera loi, où tu seras reine. quitte pas.